This is Neijing Now, prioritizing well-being. Neijing is the vitality that shields us from disease. Neijing Now, demystifying medicine, cultivating resilience, empowering host resistance, prioritizing primary prevention. I'm Dr. Jayashree Chander. I welcome you to another short clip exploring Neijing Now. I'm speaking with Ms. Lori Cousin-Allen in London through an internet-mediated phone call. She is the coordinator of the International Ban Asbestos Secretariat and the founder, publisher, and editor of the British Asbestos Newsletter, which is widely acknowledged to be an authoritative resource for the UK campaign for asbestos justice. For over 20 years, Lori has been documenting the progression of the campaign to ban asbestos worldwide. Today, she gives us an update from the front lines.
Lori, welcome back to Neijing Now.
Oh, it's good to hear from you again.
So, Lori, lots of things have been happening in the world of banning asbestos since we last spoke in 2011. You had told us about the Rotterdam Convention in 2011. I'd like to know what happened at the Rotterdam Convention this year.
It's very interesting and very distressing. I was one of several observers from the ban asbestos community. We were accorded the status of observers, which meant that we were there as representatives of our NGOs and our campaigning groups. I'd been there a few years ago, but I hadn't been there recently. And what I observed was really quite astonishing. We knew that this year Canada would not block the listing of chrysotile. Canada had announced that last year, and the reason they had changed their policy was because Canada is now out of the asbestos business.
Yay.
Yay. Well, absolutely terrific. And that was something we had, you know, long prayed for. But what has been happening over recent years is there's been a transition in leadership of the global asbestos campaign from Canadian hands to Russian hands. Now, the Russians have sought professional advice, and they've hired public relations people, so that what the Russians said was quickly echoed by their colleagues. We call them the Dirty Seven. It was Russia, Ukraine, Kazakhstan, Zimbabwe, Kyrgyzstan, Vietnam, and India. And these seven countries spoke up in support of Russia's position, and that position was that there is not sufficient evidence to include chrysotile on the Annex 3 of the Rotterdam Convention. They said the medical data wasn't confirmed, the scientific evidence was disputed. The Russians kept saying, oh, well, listing chrysotile asbestos on Annex 3 is tantamount to banning it. Now, of course, that's not the case. Listing chrysotile was intended to provide prior informed consent, the right to know to importing countries. It didn't matter what anyone said. It didn't matter how frustrated people were. The Russians were setting the agenda, and that's what they did. And as a consequence, it wasn't listed.
Wow. This feels like a really big step backwards since the 2011 Rotterdam Convention. And just for our listeners, I'm going to play a short clip of your description of what happened at the 2011 convention, which you had told me about when we spoke last time.
That was absolutely shocking. What happened at the meeting in Geneva of the Rotterdam Convention was one of the most shocking things that I have ever seen. I mean, I've been studying asbestos issues for over 20 years. I've seen a lot of political dishonesty, industrial thuggery, corporate misdeeds. What I saw in Geneva was actually evil.
Can you tell us what happened?
We all knew that the Canadians would turn up with their agenda to prevent the Rotterdam Convention from listing chrysotile asbestos as a hazardous substance. It's not a ban. It just means that when the exporter sends the product to an importing country, they need to provide information so that the importing country can make an educated assessment of whether or not they can use this product safely. Of course, Canada says, no, no, it's tantamount to a ban. You will create bad publicity. Canada decided this time to keep quiet in the discussions. And in the first day's discussions, there were a couple of countries that objected. One of them was India and a couple of other countries. Any decision of the Rotterdam Convention must be by consensus, which meant that even if one country objects, you can't have a decision to go ahead. Overnight there were discussions, and the next day India changed their mind and said they would support lifting chrysotile.
Oh, excellent.
At which point everybody was amazed and delighted and thought, this is fantastic because India is the world's biggest importer. And at which point Canada stepped out of the shadows and said, not so fast. We don't think so. And not only did they refused to give any reasons. They said, no, it's our right to deny listing chrysotile and we don't have to discuss what our reasons are. Canada was undermining the existence of the Rotterdam Convention. There is absolutely no hope for any other product that's got financial backers behind it. Canada was the only one that didn't agree, and that was enough.
So now back to 2013. Now in 2011, you know, we only had one dissenting country, and that was Canada. Everybody else agreed. And so now we have seven dissenting countries. So what gives?
You're absolutely right. In 2011, Russia was in Geneva, but only as an observer. Russia was not yet a party to the Rotterdam Convention, and neither was Zimbabwe. Since 2011, both countries have become members, which meant that they were fully entitled to take part in these discussions and to do what they did, which is to block any progress being made. If it weren't for the intervention by the Australian delegation, I think the situation would have been a lot worse. Australia just listed all the reasons why chrysotile should be put on Annex 4. Australia said that the reasons given by Russia and the Dirty Seven, or they didn't call them the Dirty Seven, the reasons given not to list chrysotile were not adequate. And then, almost like something in a film, one country after the other was putting their flag up and saying, we support the Australian position. And it went around the room, and it was incredible because it was really like something out of the scene in the film where someone says, I'm Spartacus. No, I'm Spartacus. I'm Spartacus. And each one wanted their voices to be heard. And it was to such an extent, the president of the convention said to people, put your flags up, your hands up, if you support the Australian position. And they took a photograph so they would have a record. It was the vast majority, over 140 countries that supported the Australian position. And of course, as soon as they put the flags up, Russia and China objected. It was an extraordinary moment. It didn't change anything, but at least we have the satisfaction of having a show of hands to show that the Dirty Seven were holding the convention to ransom.
Yeah, it sounds dramatic and theatrical, and I wish I would have been there. So that's the bad news. Tell me some good news, because I know that there is some good news out there.
Well, this has been the most extraordinary couple of weeks. I don't think I can remember anything like it. Well, on June the 3rd, the appeal court came down with a verdict in this landmark case against the asbestos entrepreneurs Stefan Schmidheiny and Baron Louis de Cartier de Marchand.
You can say those names so well. I've been reading those names and I can't pronounce them, so congratulations.
Yeah, I've been living with these names for a while. Now, the bad news is that the Belgian baron died about 2 weeks before the verdict. But the thing is that the case died with him. So that meant that the appeal court had to vacate any proceedings against the baron, because he was dead, but also against ETEX, E-T-E-X, which was the German Etchnet company that he was associated with. The claims from the victims with cases against the Baron and against ETEX were gone. Okay.
Yeah, that's bad news.
It's very bad news for the majority of the claimants. Nevertheless, over 2,000 claims remained in the case against Schmidheiny. And the appeal court found the sentence, which had been handed down by the court of first instance last year, consigned him to 16 years in prison. And the appeal court said that wasn't enough and increased the prison sentence to 18 years.
Wow. Well, that's great.
It's great. And the court also found, since Schmidheiny and the Baron were joint and severally liable, that Schmidheiny had to pay all the court costs himself.
Wow. This should be a really big warning for any industry, any company dealing in asbestos. You would think that every other CEO of every other company dealing in asbestos would be shaking in their boots and getting out of the business.
It's a big warning to asbestos companies, but also to other companies which engage in profit-making processes that expose workers or the public to hazardous materials.
Exactly.
Schmidheiny is 65 years old. Now, I don't know how long this case will take to get to the Supreme Court, and I don't know what his health is like, because I expect he's been exposed to a lot of asbestos himself.
What did the Baron die from?
Nobody's saying. But he was 91.
He had a long and wealthy life.
Well, that's right. And the point is, none of the victims lived to 91. When you look at it that way, you think, well, he died a peaceful death at an advanced age. And, you know, the victims don't get to enjoy that luxury.
Right.
So that was on June the 3rd. June the 5th, we got some new trade data from the United States Geological Survey, which showed asbestos use in the United States is increasing. And the use of asbestos in Asia now accounts for 71% of all global consumption.
Wow. Why would the United States be using more? It's counterintuitive.
I agree with that. Next year, you're going to call me and tell me that the United States has banned asbestos.
I hope so. I hope so. Let's plan on it.
Okay. Then on June the 6th, a New York appeal court did something really cool. They upheld a decision which had been handed down in 2011, which ordered a private review of correspondence between the asbestos defendant, Georgia Pacific, and its counsel, Stuart Holm, because Georgia Pacific funded litigation-driven research for asbestos cases. And they were rather economical with the truth of what they divulged about the sponsorship of these 11 articles which were published in scientific journals. The important thing is that the verdict of the appeal court highlighted the non-disclosure of the nature of the relationship between David Bernstein, who I believe is the asbestos industry's favorite scientist, and Georgia Pacific.
Right.
So I really would like to read some of the text from the verdict because I think it's extremely important. This is a quote. For articles lead authored by David M. Bernstein, PhD, and co-authored by Holm, the only disclosure was that the research was sponsored or supported by a grant from GP. There were no grant proposals, and Dr. Bernstein was hired by GP on an hourly basis.
Wow.
Nor did the articles reveal that David Bernstein had been disclosed as a GP expert witness since 2009, that he had testified as a defense expert for Union Carbide Corporation in asbestos litigation, or that he had been paid by and spoken on behalf of the Chrysotile Institute, the lobbying arm of the Quebec chrysotile mining industry. That's the end of the quote, but I think this is extremely important. One of the main arguments that the Russian asbestos lobby uses and that American asbestos defendants use is that the latest research clearly shows that chrysotile is not a health hazard, right?
And they're citing this research.
That's right. The citing research commissioned by Georgia Pacific or by other vested interests. And then the following day, after the New York appeal court came out with that, we got the decision by the Committee on Carcinogenicity, a UK government agency, which had been asked to look at the relative vulnerability of children to asbestos. They concentrated on the issue of whether following asbestos exposure, children could be more likely than adults to develop the asbestos cancer mesothelioma. And it was unanimous. The committee decided that the mesothelioma risk for children is higher. This is important not just for its own sake, but also because this will impact on the policy of our government regarding the asbestos in schools issue. The vast majority of schools in the United Kingdom contain asbestos. Then surely the government's going to have to change their policy, which is leave things as they are, to take action as something that should be made a priority.
I think there is an assumption that if you don't disturb the asbestos, you'll not run the risk of exposing people to it.
Well, the problem is, in the UK, a lot of the schools that were built in the 20th century had asbestos insulation around the steel columns that are in the classrooms. But the thing is, over time, there'll be holes and there'll be cracks. And you know what kids are like. You can't say to them, don't throw a ball at that wall, don't do this, don't do that. Kids will, you know, it's just unsatisfactory and it's dangerous. And we've got a very high death rate now of school teachers, caretakers, and we've even had some cases of people in their 40s who who have died from mesothelioma, and the
Wow.
courts have found that they were exposed at schools.
Wow.
It's extremely sad because children should be safe when they go to school.
It's great news that they came to that conclusion.
Just to add a final point, because I'm absolutely delighted with this news, that the Australians intend to protect people from the asbestos hazard, but to also pursue a deadline by which they want to decontaminate the whole country of asbestos. It's a new agency called the Asbestos Safety and Eradication Agency. You know, good on the Australians is what I say.
Yeah, good on them, mate. That's great.
You know, this has been a global thing, and there are people in every country that are working, you know, like crazy to try and push this thing forward. BANCO, which is the Ban Asbestos Network of Korea, they've done some incredible work. They're so imaginative. Apparently, Korean children in the winter love nothing more than to break off an icicle and to lick it, you know, and that's quite nice and quite fun, the sort of thing kids do. So BANCO analyzed some of the icicles coming off asbestos cement roofs in Korea and found that they contained asbestos.
Oh, God, I just got chills all over my body. I feel so bad to hear that. But it's good they thought of testing it. It's great.
Well, indeed, and they've warned people about it, but they've also analyzed the soil in baseball stadiums. Unfortunately, some of the soil that had been used came from these contaminated areas, and they contained asbestos. And
wow.
That was a huge scandal in Korea because baseball is an extremely popular sport there. Removal work had to be done. So those guys in Korea at BANCO, they're amazing. You know, they're very cutting edge.
Good for BANCO. That's great. Good for them. Good for us.
You know, it's just really great to see that some of it is finally paying off.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Having said that, I'd just like to put out a message to our American colleagues to, you know, get their act together and do something about the fact you haven't banned asbestos yet.
And not only that, as you've told us, we're also increasing our use of asbestos. That's shameful.
Indeed it is.
Can you very briefly tell us how the Canadian asbestos industry has died?
Not with a bang, but a whimper. Up until the very last minute, there was all sorts of posturing and threats and what was going to happen and what wasn't going to happen. And then in September last year, there was an election in Quebec. The old party that had supported the asbestos industry for decades was thrown out of office. A new political party was elected. One of the first things that the new premier did was to rescind the $58 million loan to the asbestos entrepreneurs in Quebec.
Right on.
And once that money was off the table, there was just no way that this mine development could go ahead. And that was the end.
No more asbestos coming out of Canada.
Absolutely not. And I believe that an agreement was signed and $50 million will be coming to these communities over the next few years so that they can diversify their economies. So now got a future which hopefully will not include asbestos.
That's such good news.
I hope that we can help the people that are injured and we can stop other people from experiencing the same tragedies that we've seen so many places.
I think our next steps would be if Canada would actually ban the use of asbestos and if the United States would ban the use of asbestos, then perhaps it would be like a domino effect throughout the world.
Absolutely. That's 100% right. If the United States hasn't banned asbestos, why should India or the Philippines ban asbestos? The point is, if you don't use asbestos in the first place, people won't get sick.
Exactly. Primary prevention, man. Primary prevention is where it's at. Stop the problem before it starts.
Absolutely.
What a pleasure to talk to you again. Thank you so much for talking to me today.
It's been a pleasure. I hope you have a good weekend.
That was Ms. Lori Cousin-Allen from the International Ban Asbestos Secretariat in London, England. I'm Dr. Jayashree Chander, creator of Naging Now, a podcast about prioritizing well-being, on the web at neijingnow.org. Naging Now is independent and entirely listener-supported. If you enjoyed the clip, please share it with your friends. Like us on Facebook and donate generously. Your support is essential to keeping Naging Now alive.